I feel like being really abusive to the audience today. I don't know why. What is wrong with me?
Just right out the gate, huh?
I know, right? Hey guys, this is The Backlash.
Welcome to The Backlash.
Welcome to The Backlash. I feel like crap. I should just start by saying that I feel terrible because everyone's going to be like, this is low energy. This is low energy.
Just vibing.
Yeah. For those of you that have kids, is this a phenomenon that everybody experiences? Your kid like coughs one time and then you get whatever they had and it's like the worst virus you've ever had in your life.
There's usually a delay for me.
Yeah.
Like a couple week delay.
Oh, that's a long time.
Yeah.
Annalise has like a nothing cough and I feel like I'm going to die. Like I feel like I'm going to die.
So you get it quick. Yeah.
It's fine.
Cesspools.
They're
especially when they get into school.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. When they get into school, it's worse.
So I'm amazed this interview happened. We are so happy to have you here, Kai Schwimmer. I was pretty worried that we were going to have to cancel on you, but he's here in studio.
Hey, thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
I'm very excited to be here.
That's Kai so cool. Clips.
Kai Clips.
Yes.
You want to give the audience like a little breakdown of who you are, where you came from, what's your deal?
Absolutely. So I was about 2 years ago much more active in politics. So a lot of people probably who have come to the scene lately or who have watched this show for the last 2 years or anybody in the last 2 years hasn't heard of me. But I used to be very active in this kind of America First, right-wing nationalist conservative crowd. I would do a lot of debate panels and I got my start on TikTok when TikTok was having a true conservative moment around quarantine.
Yeah.
Obviously they cracked down, so I didn't stay on there long, but I became a streamer on Cozy TV. And, now I'm back from having served a mission in the provinces of Mendoza and San Juan, Argentina for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I got back about 2 months ago and it's been a wild ride catching up. There were a lot of things that happened. Vince is now way more in tune with what's happening pop culture wise than I am. He's quoting all kinds of memes that I haven't even heard of. But
yeah, I'm getting him up to date with the brain rot.
Good.
That's good. Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing like some good brain rot to really move the cause of America First forward.
You need like a little bit of it though, right?
True.
So what were you doing on TikTok? What were your videos like?
So they started, I think the first video I actually ever made, which I only debuted to the debate club that I was a part of. I was the varsity captain my senior year of the debate club. And the first video was actually about just how both parties in the United States support foreign aid to Israel. That was the first video I ever made without realizing like what the actual, like how base that was.
Yeah, and the consequences of that.
Yeah. But then I ended up, you know, doing funny videos. I would make political stuff. I had a video about abortion that went super viral that had Billie Eilish comment on it.
What? What did she say?
She said something to the effect of, you know, why don't you shut the F up about women's bodies?
Oh,
of course.
And I found out about it because her Stan accounts actually took a screenshot of it. Her account got her comment got deleted. Mm. So I actually never saw it. I had no idea that Billie Eilish had commented. And I just started seeing a bunch of these Billie stans comment on my account, like saying all kinds of mean things, like Billie ratioed you, like all this stuff. And I was like, what even happened? And I saw an edit where somebody had taken a video of mine, put some music, like saying, you're the guy, like who's at fault? And they had then stitched Billie's comment from the video onto it. So that's how I found out.
But how many replies did her comment have?
I don't know. I never got to see it. I was on like a week ban, and that's what TikTok does. They give you a week ban, and then 5 days into it, they'll give you another week ban just to kind of, you know, drag out the excruciating pain. And then they just delete your account before you're ever reinstated.
So they deleted your account?
Yeah, multiple times. I would always get to about 60,000 followers, and then I would get axed right there.
Oh, man.
But I had a resurgence talking like Patrick Bateman. That was a bit that I did for a while when that was funny. Is that still funny?
No, it's kind of stale. No,
that's stale too.
Crap.
It's like, someone
that's been in jail for like a couple of years. You know what I mean?
Even they have better, you know, access to the internet. I see videos on TikTok. You will get TikToks of guys in jail.
Yeah. No, I've seen the live streams. Yeah. Live streams of just like black guys, just like, you know, like rapping.
Yeah.
Like how'd you get a phone?
Live from prison.
Literally.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, prison's different than jail. I think you can have a phone in prison. Didn't Sam Bankman-Fried do like an interview with Tucker Carlson recently?
It wasn't on a phone though. I think that he had to get special permissions and all
I'm
sorts
sure
of
he
stuff.
Could pull some strings.
Yeah.
He's like on
I don't
same
think he's the average black rapper.
Yeah, I don't think he's the average Jewish billionaire
as Diddy. He's on the same cell block with Diddy.
You'll collab?
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy. It's kind of messed up. Before we get too far, we should probably do our sponsor read.
Oh, thank you.
For Antelope Hill Publishing, America's leading publisher of dissident books. They include a wide array of both original works and new first-time translations of important historical titles. Their catalog focuses on bringing you books the mainstream publishers won't touch, books to challenge the ruling orthodoxy on history, politics, and the twisted nature of the system that we live under. Among our titles are The Open Society Playbook, a deep dive into the web of NGOs and shadowy government funding that has recently come under fire in the USAID scandal for spreading left-wing ideological corruption at home and abroad. We're also proud to publish The American Regime by Christian Secor, initially written anonymously by the author while in prison for his actions on January 6th. It examines how the American Leviathan functions. If you're listening to this show, you won't be disappointed in these or any of the other books from Antelope Hill Publishing. You can view their catalog directly online and make purchases at antelopehillpublishing.com. Supporting independent creators and businesses directly. Check us out today.
Thank you, Antelope Hill. I still can't believe that people are willing to work with us.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's
We've got
shocking.
Three sponsors. And by the way, big shout out to our sponsor, Atlas Bullion. I need to pull them up too real quick.
Yeah.
Because we got a big...
Someone dropped 10K into metals.
I heard it was 20.
Okay.
I heard it was 20K, but it was actually, I'm allowed to say it, it's Silent Bear.
Oh, big shout out to Silent Bear.
No way,
thank
you.
Came over to Atlas Bullion, and we get a little kickback when you purchase with Atlas Bullion. We appreciate it. It helps support this show. It helps keep us going. It helps us bring you the content that you've come to know and love and desire on a weekly basis.
Like three Mormons in a row, or almost in a row.
Wait, how many Mormons have we had? Sam Parker.
Sam Parker, black-pilled, and now...
Not enough.
Someone put a rosary on his chair before he got here.
That was my daughter. So I picked him up from the airport, right? Oh, excuse me. I'm getting a frog in my throat. You're getting me sick already, Rebecca. Jeez, gosh.
That's on you.
No. So I pick them up from the airport, right? And my kids they're normally pretty happy and they're pretty nice to come out and play or whatever. But we come home from the airport and my daughter comes up to Kai with the rosary. He's like, Kai, hi, nice to meet you. This is our rosary and that's Jesus. Mm. And then brings him into the office and is like, look, there's the cross with Jesus on it. And it's like, geez, kid, back off.
Yeah, really.
We're not trying to convert. We get it. We get it. Okay.
We pray the rosary every day on the couch. We pray every bead. It's like, oh, this is awesome. I thought I was going to be doing the converting.
You're coming to mass with us. But before we get too far away from just mentioning about Silent Bear's conversion, speaking of conversions to Atlas Bullion, I wanted to point out Kenzie was showing me some of the product that he was getting from a competitor, right? He invested money. Yeah. He invested serious money in a different gold and silver company. And this is the crap they were sending him. Look at this. A Barack Obama coin.
What the heck?
It's in Are bad you shape, kidding too. Me?
And they're all dinged up. I mean, it looks like it got ran over by a car.
I'm a fan of that monkey, though.
Yeah, that monkey is nice.
It's just a little kind of, not exactly the premium stuff Nazi coins that we were getting from.
Yeah. Reichsmark.
Just kidding. You won't get Nazi coins if you sign up with Atlas Bullion.
Are you sure?
I don't think it's legal. It might be. It might not be. Who knows? It could be a mystery box.
I'm going to kill that chicken.
It's a rooster.
It's a rooster. Well, roosters are chickens. It's one of those days.
It is one of those days.
I'll kill it. I don't care. I have no attachment to this cock.
Well, Kai, give us some insight into how was your mission? What was the deal?
Well, it was a blast. For those who don't know, the men who choose to serve missions, it's not like this, requirement. It is something we see as a responsibility of the men, and that's the way a faith stays alive. You either have kids or you proselytize. And when we look at what Christ said, his last words after he trains his apostles, what does he tell them to do? To go forth to all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Ghost. So the idea of proselytizing to us in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is super important. So I basically sent in, and the missionary process is this way. You send in a request to serve, and that is received by who we believe governs the church, which is a body that governs it, which is the exact same as the original church or the primitive church, comprised of 12 apostles and a prophet at the head. Christ obviously being the prophet. There had been prior ones, and then Peter taking his spot. And those prophets, or that prophet and apostles, they will receive this request to serve. They will pray, they will fast, and then they will send you to basically any place in the world that will accept missionaries. There's very few that don't. You know, Muslim countries, Israel also doesn't accept missionaries in places.
Hmm.
Yeah, well, what's up with that? What's up with that?
It's a little odd.
What's going on there?
What's going on there?
But, what about Russia? You guys are, was there something in Russia?
Yeah, there's actually a temple that is going to be built in Russia, just like here as well in Idaho.
That rooster is going nuts.
Can I go kick it on stream?
I'll shoot it on stream. My God, I killed three last week.
What?
Yeah, they started pecking the kids. If a rooster pecks a kid, I'm killing it.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's that.
That's the deal.
Sorry about that, Kai. Go
ahead. That's okay.
Please, Russia.
Yeah, so in Russia, you are actually allowed to be a missionary, as far as I'm aware. You just can't wear the name tag. You can't proselytize in public. Somebody has to invite you to their house, or you have to go to some other, you know, location that you've agreed on. But you can't publicly proselytize. It has to be like, you know, answer this question. Okay, and then you can answer that, but you can't go any further. So there are stricter laws about proselytizing because it is, you know, an Orthodox country, right? And they have a more firmly established national faith. But yeah, there's other places that just won't allow, you know, these Christian missionaries. Well, and that's something that many people might argue about, but they won't even accept us there.
Well, see, I thought it would be like really interesting to talk because word has come down that we are going to be getting a brand new Mormon temple here in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. This is a mock-up of it, the Coeur d'Alene temple.
Beautiful. Where's it going to be?
Huh?
Where?
I don't know where. It's going to be here in Coeur d'Alene.
There's one that looks like that not far from here. I don't know in which direction. Is it in Montana?
There should be one in Spokane.
There's one
in
near Spokane.
Yeah. No, there's one like...
Here's the deets on it. Mm. It's Coeur d'Alene. It was announced, I guess, last October.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't broken ground yet, but they will be, right? President Russell M. Nelson announced plans to construct the Coeur d'Alene Temple.
And he would be the current prophet.
When you look at, I was going to pull up, excuse me, I'm drinking all this Perrier, mass conversion to Catholicism. There's like been a mass conversion to Catholicism, as we can see here 11 hours ago. Something's happening in France. It's happening in England. It's happening in the U.S., I only began to notice it a few weeks ago on Ash Wednesday. It seems awfully sudden, so perhaps. But anyway, it's France sees 10,000 adult baptisms in 2025, a 45% increase. We also saw in England this extraordinary resurgence of the Catholic faith in Britain.
Cool.
Catholicism is now officially the largest denomination of faith in Britain, which is nice. It goes Catholicism, then Anglicanism, and then, of course,
Islam.
Mohammedanism or whatever. But it is interesting, you know, Kootenai County is, I think, top five population per capita of Catholics in the country. Mm-hmm. We've got like eight different parishes up here. We have big families, eight kids, nine kids, sometimes 15. You know, we get a little out of control sometimes.
I like those numbers. And I like those numbers.
The only other group of people that's having kids at the same rate as the Catholics is the Mormons.
Yep.
And so clearly we need to be building bridges between the Catholics, the Mormons, mm-hmm. and the two of us together, we can take over the state of Idaho.
So real.
And rule
yeah,
with an iron rod. Christ yep. is king. We can agree on that, and we can subjugate all of the dumb Protestants and, you know, put them in their place.
Well, this is the case. Yeah. Sorry to cut you off. I mean, it's just we've got the South. We've got Rexburg. I mean, we've got BYU Idaho.
Yeah.
And
true.
If you guys can control the North, we got to lock down.
I think so.
Why do you think that there's so much crossover in our realm? I think that the attitude about Mormons is that it's this kooky religion. People, you know, people are like, "What's going on here?" People don't typically view it as a Christian faith, but there are a lot of Mormons in our movement. What about Mormonism has led to this crossover with America First?
That's a super good question. And I think it's important to preface it by saying that whatever your politics are, your faith has to come first.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's super dangerous because what you see a lot of the times, especially as people start, you know, enjoying the idea of being based, they think about themselves as based, they'll start to allow their politics to inform their faith. And it should never be that way.
Right.
That being said, I think built into our faiths, there is this tradition, there is a hierarchical structure, there is a head of the church, whether it be a prophet or whether it be the Pope. There is this similar structure, and there is a ingrained idea of, you know, pride in one's identity as a child of God and also in the family, which is why I think you're also seeing, you know, these large families in both groups. And that is not the case with every religion. or it's not the case for the same reasons. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's plenty of other groups that have lots of children, but it's not because they see some kind of, you know, true value in in the idea of raising a family and having this you know, new generation to help train and to help teach that Christ is Lord. So I think that the big overlap is in this fundamental ideology. And it's important, and what I love now, especially coming back, is there's this huge push and a more mainstream idea of Christian nationalism being the way to go. Even though at times there's attempts to, you know, cut that at the knees when people start to parrot these incredibly insane ideas, like that Christ is king is some kind of subversive tool. Right. I mean, this is just a genuine statement. I mean, it's not a talking point, or at least it shouldn't be. It's a statement of fact. It is an eternal truth. So it's good to see that Christian nationalism has started to rise up among the right wing, you know, faithful people. And then it's starting to also replace, as you mentioned, this kind of Protestantism that seemed to be more obsessed with what was happening in other countries than, you know, how to actually bolster and support their nation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's super positive.
I'm curious, what is the Mormon position on abortion and contraception?
That's a good question. So the Mormon position, frankly, I think ought to be improved. The policy position, and there should be some contextualization. There was actually a fantastic talk given at a twice a year biannual. We had this discussion on the last podcast.
Yeah.
What'd you call that? A biannual?
Yeah. Would it be?
Twice yearly?
See, it's confusing, right?
It is confusing. Yeah. And I got to give you some credit. It is more confusing. I was listening to the podcast before. How can Rebecca say that? No, I'm in the hot seat.
Yeah, go ahead.
But there's a conference twice a year where the prophet and the apostle speak, and one of the apostles chose to talk about the issue of abortion, mentioned some specific cases where mothers were supported by the church, even when they were perhaps, you know, victims of rape or sexual assault, that they carried a baby to term, and the beauty of that and the sanctity overall of life. That being said, the policy the church supports, I don't think is a good one. I think it's an agreeable one to the majority of people, but it's not, in my opinion, morally consistent, because it says there is some kind of leeway that can be applied after a long, you know, engagement with one's bishop talking about the circumstance in the case of rape or incest.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that anybody who is pro-life could actually, you know, justify that position.
Mm-hmm.
If you think that abortion is wrong because it is the wrongful termination of an innocent life, then there's nothing about a case of rape that causes the idea of an abortion to, you know, make that untrue.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The logic doesn't carry over. Mm-hmm. And so I think that the policy position of the church ought to change in that respect. Yeah. I think it should be strict.
Well, also, like, the thing is that when you start to make exceptions, especially when they're extremely rare, like rape or incest, which, you know, it's like 0.0 whatever percent of the cases. I went over this before on my show. If you look at the Guttmacher Institute, which is like a liberal organization, they give the numbers. They say like 50% of women who have abortions have had at least one abortion before.
Yeah.
They say that 25% have had at least two. So they're using it as a form of contraception.
100%.
And when you start to make exceptions, that's when the subversion occurs. That's how, you know, that's how we're in this position now. I mean, look at the 1960s. You saw the liberals screaming for free speech. And now look what's happened. They've gotten control of everything. So, you know, when you start to make exceptions like, oh, the health of the mother, that turns into the mental health of the mother.
Yeah.
So, you know, we can't have any exceptions, and not especially not basing it off of something that's extremely rare or non-existent.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this is always the issue, and I think it's so frustrating because, you know, the members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, they are, and we are all very empathetic people. We want to be liked. We want to be kind. That's where you get the stereotype of like this really kind Mormon, these nice people. I think that's a good thing. I think we ought to be nice. But I think a lot of the times we misunderstand the distinction or how we ought to apply justice and mercy.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the times when we apply mercy or we try to be, you know, so excessively merciful, we are not complying with this law of justice, which is just as necessary. And if you apply mercy too much, you get what you're talking about, Vince, which is that, you know, these people will push it further. The people you give mercy to will eventually be the ones who you're demanding mercy from,
right?
Because they are going to crush you.
Yep.
They're absolutely going to crush you. And so I think it's an attempt to be these kind people. It's an attempt to say, well, there's these tiny cases and I don't think you ought to get an abortion, but it should be something that, you know, like after discussing it, like for a long time with your bishop, and after careful consideration, you know, maybe we could tolerate it. I think that is, frankly, just a blindness to the way that the left works.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. And that's the problem. The Nick, church on policy just doesn't understand how the left works.
I was going to say, Nick had an amazing monologue the other night when he was talking about this Austin Metcalf murder, right? And, you know, it's true in our country. We've been merciful with the absence of justice. Mm-hmm. We haven't brought anyone to justice for any of these crimes that have been committed in our country. None of the Epstein clients have been arrested. None of the people responsible for the open borders have been arrested. None of the people responsible for the mass wars and genocides that we've been perpetuating in the Middle East, nobody's been arrested. There's been zero justice. But then all of a sudden, the killer of Austin Metcalf, and they all cry, mercy, 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 please. And it's like, no. We need justice first.
Yes.
We need justice first. Then maybe we'll have some mercy after justice has been served. Mm-hmm. But it's a big deal. It's a big issue in this country.
And in terms of the abortion, it's not merciful to the unborn child.
Yeah
right? Yeah. I mean, this kid did nothing. Did nothing. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable.
Yeah, and if you, mercy can't rob justice.
Right.
You can't. And this is the incredible thing about Christ's atonement, is he fulfills both laws. He fulfills both laws perfectly. He had to die because, if not, it would have been impossible for any of us to ever return to our Father in heaven. And he had to die because, the penalty of sin is death. It's like the wages of sin is death. And us having sinned so much, there had to be a punishment applied, a punishment that would have been eternal. We would have been eternally cast out from the presence of God. But Christ, and also if we were to say that the atonement never occurred, we could never claim that God is a merciful God, because he creates us and allows our inevitable damnation, which is also what I think, Calvinism is this totally untenable position. It's a ridiculous idea. And it's funny because when you talk to Calvinists, the response typically, and I had this response recently, well, but the scripture says, it's like, well, you haven't refuted the claim that a Calvinist God is an unloving God, that he is not a merciful God.
Right.
You're just saying that the scripture supports it. And it shows that often, these Protestant groups don't worship God. They worship scripture. They worship, the physical scripture rather than the deity. But, talking about this idea of mercy and justice, Christ and his atonement is so beautiful because he perfectly, complies with this eternal law of justice by suffering the penalty, and also with the law of mercy by saving us all. And he was the only one who could do it. He was the only one.
By the way, abortions in Idaho are down 99.5%.
Seriously.
From what year?
2022 into 2023.
Baby's winning.
So, obviously, that's going to be the biggest year over year, because that was the year that we had the law passed thanks to the Supreme Court decision. But,
That's crazy. 99%.
99.5%.
That's crazy.
So,
what is when you look up on Google, what is a Mormon Protestant? They say that technically Mormons are considered Protestant.
That's a ridiculous claim, and it's very important. This is actually, to get back to that first question, because it's great. What makes the Catholic and the LDS position so similar? Why are we finding so many people in the right wing, from both of these faith camps? Right? It's because I think at the root you have similar claims to the necessity of authority as well.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the Protestant claim to authority? It's like Pastor Bob, it's Pastor Joe, it's
right.
His interpretation of the Bible. We believe that an apostasy occurs in the primitive church, that there is a withdrawing of priesthood keys that Christ had given personally to his apostles. And this comes, and when you read, these epistles in the New Testament, you read about the apostasy. A huge apostasy occurs in Asia, where all of the believers turn away. And the Catholic idea and the Orthodox idea, if I'm not mistaken, is that apostasy didn't occur to the extent that the priesthood keys were withdrawn, and that there is some kind of succession after Peter through, who is it, Linnaeus? Or no?
Linus,
yeah.
Cletus, Linnaeus. Clement.
Yeah, and it's that there is that continuous trail of the priesthood authority.
Mm-hmm.
The LDS perspective is, well, there is an apostasy that occurs, and we can see that maybe in a changing of the theology.
Mm-hmm.
We can see that in the fusion with the Greek and, Roman philosophy that was popular at the time. God starts to resemble less, the Old Testament God starts to resemble more, Aristotle's God. And for example, the apostolic office disappears. Why is there no more, office of an apostle? Why do the apostles who do exist not come back together and call another after some of them are dead? The way that they did when Judas had died, right? With Nathaniel, if I'm not mistaken, in the first chapter of Acts.
Was it Barnabas? I can't remember. I think I need to brush up on my theology.
I think it's Nathaniel, but I might be mistaken. I actually think I am mistaken on that. But so you have that claim, and the LDS idea is that the priesthood authority is restored, that God the Father and Christ the Son come back to earth, and by the laying on of hands, restore priesthood authority to a prophet that they call in the modern day, and that is Joseph Smith. Mm. And as much as it is a modern thing, and maybe in that sense it's similar to Protestantism, it is a totally different claim to authority. We believe that this church, the church of which I'm a part, is the church of Jesus Christ, the one that he established when he was on the earth, which had been gone for a time because of the apostasy. He won't force his church onto people, but had been restored because he would never allow the gates of hell to completely prevail. And that's the idea. You know, we may disagree about the apostasy, but we agree that it is necessary to have a direct, you know, line of priesthood from the hands of Christ to the current day.
Interesting. Yeah, it was Matthias, by the
Matthias,
way.
Matthias, that's who it was. Matthias. Yeah, Nathaniel was one of the apostles, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm.
Is confession part of Mormon culture?
In a sense, not in the same sense as it is in the Catholic culture. If I'm not mistaken, you guys have to confess before you take the
Eucharist.
Yeah, before you take the Eucharist. Yeah. For us, frankly, that's what we ought to do. If you read the scriptures, you ought to confess. You know, if you have a problem of unworthiness, you ought to confess that to a priesthood leader, which in our case is a bishop, somebody who would preside over what in your case would be a parish, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. For us, it's a ward or a stake.
Yeah.
We should confess to them. They can help us through a repentance process and help us become worthy of taking the sacrament. Because if we take it unworthily, you know, this staining us. Yeah, it's not good at all. So we believe in the importance of confession, but we don't believe it's necessary prior to the taking, for example, of the sacrament or of the Eucharist.
Interesting.
How many people were you able to convert in Argentina?
Like
wait, first of all, so the thumbnail, can you pull up the thumbnail real quick, Dave?
Yeah,
or
but
no?
We can't talk. Hold on.
Oh, okay. There's a thumbnail. There's a thumbnail. It says, El Libro de Mormon.
Yes.
De Mormon. I guess Mormon, he did that because you were in Argentina.
Uh-huh.
So is that what your book looked like?
Yeah.
In Spanish?
Mm-hmm.
So how many people did you convert? What do you consider a conversion? And are you targeting people that are already like, you know, they believe in Jesus Christ or like, what do you, what, give me your spiel.
Let's go.
If you were to show up to my house.
How much money are you going to pay in tithing?
No, that's a joke.
Speaking of, get your super chats in at thebacklash.net/superchat. Keep this show on the air.
If you have a theological qualm, the money doesn't go to me, so don't.
Give me your intro, your short intro. What do you, okay, you knock on my door.
Something I love to do.
Okay, hello, hi.
Hey, great
how
to meet you.
Doing?
Mucho Hola, gusto.
¿Cómo estás?
Sí, ¿cómo estás?
Buenas tardes, ¿cómo anda hoy?
¿Cómo estás? Tú es muy bonito.
Oh, gracias, muchas gracias.
Okay. Sos medio sospechoso.
I just call him sus in Spanish.
Eres medio sospechoso, la verdad.
No. But one of the things that I would love to do, because the thing that does set the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints apart from the rest of the Christian world is the Book of Mormon. So if we had, you know, El Libro de Mormon, I would ask, you know, how your day is. And it, typically we weren't knocking doors. That's not really a super effective way of doing the proselytizing. We would typically talk to members of the church and we would say, hey, do you know anybody who's going through a tough time, who needs some help with something? We would do service oftentimes without the proselytizing just to help people out. But once we found that person, or maybe if we were knocking a door, we would say, hey, how are you? You know, we'd probably have an icebreaker question, like, what's the most important thing in your life? And it's funny because those are our questions that the Jehovah's Witnesses would have similar questions, but it would be like, where's the kingdom of God on earth or in heaven or something like that? But then I would typically, and this was my personal thing, every missionary has their own way of doing things. It used to be more scripted. Nowadays, it's way more free flowing. Which is to better suit your needs. I'd say, have you ever seen this book before, the Book of Mormon? You'd probably say no. Or you would say, oh, you guys are like the polygamists, right?
Yeah.
And I would say something to the effect of, yeah, this is the Book of Mormon. It's an ancient, and this is weird to me because I never had to do this in English. I only did it in Spanish, so I'll probably slip up on a few words. But this is an ancient record, similar to the Bible, which explains and describes the travel or the migration of a group of Israelites out of Israel prior to the destruction of Jerusalem and leaving around the time of about 600 years before Christ. And through a mandate or through the guidance of God, they come to the Americas, where we believe they established two great civilizations, one called the Nephites and the other called the Lamanites. they became large civilizations with lots of people, and they continued worshiping Christ the way they had. The Book of Mormon is a tool that we have that has been given to us by the translation, which is only possible through the gift and power of God. And it was translated by a prophet that God has called for the modern day. And we believe that by reading this book, you can come to know Christ in a more personal way. You can get to know him better and improve your relationship with him. Would you be interested in finding out more? And this was accurate. And this was 90% of the experience.
Luckily, how many did you convert? What do you consider a conversion? How many did you convert?
So
we want numbers.
It depends. I think the most specific, benchmark conversion is a lifelong process.
You guys get back and you put it on a whiteboard
We got one.
If you get competition. 10 in a row, you actually get to drink a coffee. You get a free pass.
For us, the most standard metric for conversion would be baptisms, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody who makes this first covenant with God enters into that relationship through baptism. And, we have some differences there. We believe that it has to be done by immersion and by the proper authority. That's that same deal of authority. It can't be whoever, and they can't just dump you into a canal. It has to be a specific authority, somebody who's been set apart to do that. As far as how many people were baptized while I was teaching them, I did write down, their names and the people, because I never want to forget these people. I think the number would probably be around, 20. The interesting thing, though, is once you start looking at those people, and you see the domino effect.
Mm-hmm.
There was a kid who I had the chance to baptize in my last week in my second area, because as missionaries, we go rotating around the provinces. And this guy went on to baptize probably more people than I baptized in my mission. This guy became a superstar. And it was a miracle the way we found him. His mom had been diagnosed with cancer and had just told him and the family about it. We had put him into, we would make our schedule every day, and we just put him in. Without realizing who it was, we ended up finding him, and he told us, "I've been looking for you guys this whole time." And we were all like, "Well, we actually weren't really thinking about passing by your house, but we did so anyway." And he ended up explaining this to us, the situation, and we chatted with him. We told him a little bit about what we call the plan of salvation, which is God's plan for all of us and the afterlife. And it was this huge miracle, and he ended up getting baptized in my last week in that area. And then went on to proselytize basically to the rest of his family, and they all started getting baptized. And eventually he received the priesthood and was able to baptize them himself, which was really cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't Argentina a Catholic country?
It is, but
it's all kind of a giant Catholic L.
I was going to say, what were they before?
So most of them, it's surprising. There's a huge Protestant. The people who I
beefed
with.
Answer carefully.
The people who I beefed with. And I didn't, the missionaries aren't there to do what we call bash, which is debate people about the scriptures. Protestants, really like doing that because they have typically a really, profound scriptural knowledge, or they've at least studied up the debates. And they would argue with us a lot. The people who we proselytized to oftentimes were Catholic, but never went to church and saw it more a soccer game. And I had multiple times where we'd be teaching somebody and they would believe everything we were saying. They would say, "Yeah, I believe the Book of Mormon is true." And, the obvious conclusion is you should probably get baptized then because no other church has the Book of Mormon. But they would say, "But I was baptized Catholic when I was a baby." So it would be I'm a fan of River Plate, this one team in Argentina. And it would be me putting on a jersey of the rival team, Boca Juniors. Yeah. This is your eternal salvation. It's not a soccer match.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, and this is something that happens all over the world, the faith of most of these people, it was CEO Catholics, Christmas, Easter only, if that. And they didn't understand the theology of the Catholic Church often. It was just kind of this thing that had been put on them, some kind of hand-me-down or something that had been passed along generationally without any true understanding of what it was. And that's unfortunate. It is. It's a huge challenge. It is.
And especially, we were talking on the way from the airport about, what had happened with Vatican II and this kind of the fact that a lot of people just don't understand their faith. They don't take it seriously. There was I think an excess in America really in the 1950s of this just kind of blind obedience where the priest says this and you believe it and you never ask why and you don't bother to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of just led to this culture of Whatever the priest said, I'm not questioning anything anymore. I'm not understanding. I'm not going back and comparing. Does this line up with everything else that we've been taught?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that leads to things like liberation theology, which has wreaked havoc on South America. You know, it's led to color revolutions. It's been manipulated by the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
Jay Dyer, who's mm-hmm. joining us next week, is probably going to tell us all about that and get us to try and convert to Orthodoxy.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, the Catholic Church has really dropped the ball. And that's why, you know, it is kind of heartening to see some of these statistics coming out, especially in places that were traditionally Catholic, like England and France. Where people are coming back to the faith. I heard recently, actually, that St. John's, the Orthodox Church, has 50 catechumens.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow.
People that are being, you know, going to be inducted in. Well, and I think also this year, Easter, for the Orthodox and the Catholics, falls on the same Sunday for, like, the first time in, like, 1,000 years.
I didn't know they had different calendars.
The church that I go to.
The Julian calendar.
One of the days that I went, I don't know if you were going, too, but there was, like, probably 50 plus.
Wow.
On the day that I went.
That's amazing.
Catechumen. So
Gen Z is pushing that real hard.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Gen Z is killing it.
Gen Z and Gen Alpha is even more religious than Gen Z.
Yeah.
So like my son and his friends, like the big thing is I don't know where this comes from, but you know, they're quoting like Bible verses. My son has a Bible verse printed on his baseball glove, and
so epic.
Like it's all of his friends, and like the big popular thing is like crucifix, like shirts with like crucifix, like a crucifix on it, or like stuff like that, like Christian branded clothes, and I mean it's huge.
Yeah.
I don't know where this is coming from. I don't know if it's like because of Instagram or what, but
there's a countercultural element.
Yeah.
Like my 14-year-old nephew messaged me and he's like, I'm thinking about converting to Catholicism.
Based.
But no, he has no Catholics in the family. None.
Based? Yeah. That's awesome.
It's the internet. It's like, where else do you hear from?
Yep.
Like,
yeah.
What, some guy approached you on the street? You want to join RCIA? You want to start? It's like,
yeah.
No.
No,
yeah.
It's the internet. Yeah. It's hugely powerful.
And the Protestants, I mean, like, you know, there's also this kind of element. I've noticed this with the young kids, like, there is like a high degree. What is it? 1 in 33 are autistic now.
And wow. Like, we're so back.
Emotional arguments. Just
the
meek
will inherit the earth.
True. But emotional arguments like don't affect autistic people at all. You'll be like, but don't you feel bad? And he's like, no, show me the evidence.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? And with Protestantism, 90% of it is like emotion, laser lights, fog machines, and sing songs. There's no doctrine. There's like nothing to like back it up. At least Mormons have some system, some doctrinal basis for what they believe. Catholics, obviously, Orthodox as well.
Yep.
I mean, of all of the religions out there, I would say that Catholicism, Orthodoxy, and Mormonism are probably like the strongest contenders in America right now. Next to Islam, obviously, which is like totally taken over Dearborn and other areas, but.
What do you think
all
about
of England?
What do you think about Christians having something of an unholy alliance with Muslims because we basically all feel the same way about the state of Israel?
I think this is like, I don't know, people are just addicted to like having these like funny team ups. And they all and it's like, I get it. Like, especially with like the pro-Palestine issue and whatnot. It's so fun to be on one of these college campuses. Like I was at UCI and saw this huge pro-Palestine protest. And I was looking at this, I'm like, yeah, we were doing like a change my mind type table. I'm like, we probably agree with these people on some of these issues. And it's kind of funny to find those uncharacteristic alliances. But people just take that and they allow that to spiral into, come on in, you're better than the other guys.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Without realizing that, well, you know, it's kind of the problem of this mass migration of incompatible religious groups that is the reason for, you know, this surgence in female genital mutilation in like Michigan and other states in this country.
Right.
We have to, you know, be cognizant of the fact that, you know, maybe this one, you know, based agreement isn't reason enough to, you know, strike up this huge alliance. You have to be pretty careful about how people, you know, we'll play that out.
Well, there's another religion that got us all to do male genital mutilation.
Yeah, really.
True.
True. Yeah.
True.
So you were in Irvine?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I was just down there. It was awesome. That was
you gave a speech to the college Republicans there, right?
Yeah, I did UC Irvine and UCLA this last week. It was a blast.
Nice.
Yeah. So.
What did you talk about?
The speeches were focused, the first one on immigration and talking about this idea of mercy and justice. I really have been reading some of the scriptures about that and honing in on that. And it's also my way of, staying in touch with this spiritual progress and conversion that I've had from the last 2 years. I don't want to lose that.
Mm-hmm.
Because coming back to politics is like jumping back into Babylon. It's like the worst.
Right.
So talked about that, talked about immigration, and I addressed like the H-1B visa stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And also some of the, at UCLA, I talked about some of the stuff that had changed in the last 2 years, but how those are basically all reduced to symbolic victories.
Mm-hmm.
And the right is addicted to that. The right is addicted to these, like, not to be grotesque, but these self-masturbatory kind of victories that
totally
look good on paper, but yep, actually will not affect your life in any
yep
true way.
Yep, totally. Mm-hmm.
And that's frustrating.
Yeah, like Doge, things yeah like that.
Oh,
yeah.
I just saw, was it today?
That if you talk about Bitcoin right now.
No, I'm not. I've got okay my computer's talking about Bitcoin for me, as you can see with my new stickers. But no, I heard that Doge had to revise down their target from $2 trillion of cuts to something like $130 billion, which essentially
that's like nothing
is a rounding error.
Yeah,
A rounding error. That's not going to provide anything substantial for the economy,
mm-hmm,
for these unfunded liabilities that we've been talking about on the Wednesday episodes with Cameron.
Sounds like how the ICE has to revise down their targets mm-hmm for deportations.
Yeah, 300 a day.
Anyway. And that's arrests. Those are arrests. Yeah.
Oh, well, now that we're going after students, we could probably bump it up. I'm sure they'll
really
become much more happy about that. That was the thing at UCI. It was like I think 5 students had their visas revoked. That was
really
a big thing there.
That's crazy.
But
prioritizing that.
Yeah. But the protesters were also kind of insane. Like they took the Jewish chancellor of the school. They made him into like a paper mache, like puppet, and and gave him a t-shirt that said, I love genocide. And it's like we were really expecting them to take like a baseball bat.
That's what they do in
it
Poland.
Was
pinata.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It was nuts.
Oh man.
My God. Yeah. The Polish soccer games are crazy.
People are not messing around.
No.
Wasn't there someone in Poland, like some group in Poland that held up like a Jewish effigy like a few years back?
I
and
think
they were
that
like
was the Oboz Narodowo Radikalinski.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. ONR, which is a very based Catholic right-wing group that has been around since the 1930s. And there's also Konfederacja, but I think that's more the political party over there. We should really get somebody from Poland to come on the show and like give us the readout.
Here it is. Polish Judas ritual anti-Semitic. Look at these kids. We're like beating this like Jewish.
The girl's like 7. Like,
that's like something straight out of Borat.
Yeah.
The World Jewish WJC had voiced outrage over a Polish town's ritual beating a Judas effigy, which looks like a caricature of an Orthodox Jew.
Does he have curls and everything? Oh,
jeez.
And they beat it and then they burned it.
No. Optics check. Can we get an optics check in Poland real
isn't
quick?
Isn't the claim also that, like, back then everybody was, I suppose not Orthodox Jews, but everybody was Jewish?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the other claim. But
I don't know.
Maybe it's historically accurate. I don't know.
Who knows?
There's different streams. Wait, you're talking about at the time of Jesus? There were the Nazarites. There were the Essenes.
Yeah.
There were the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Sicarii Zealots. It's never been a monolithic group, And that's, I think, one of the reasons why Christ came, to kind of like put an end to all of the division,
mm-hmm,
bring the flock into one fold, one pastor, mm-hmm, one leader.
Yep.
And that's what what's his name? There's one of the apostles whose name is Dallin A. Chokes. This guy's amazing. Like, this guy would have ended up on the Supreme Court had he not, received a calling from God. And I think he made the right choice. But he said, Jesus didn't call us. He didn't say, you're mine if you are diverse. So if you are mine, you're one. You
right
are one. You are one body, like you said, and we are united under Christ. So this is very true. I don't think from a religious perspective, diversity has ever been a strength. I think it's something that's pretty firmly advocated against, to identify mm-hmm yourself by all the things that make you incompatible with other people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, are Mormons pretty based? like on stuff like this and other things?
Until 1978. No, I'm kidding.
That's something we would run into, especially online with the online-based crowd. Oh, you're Mormon? Yeah. Oh, so you guys like practice polygamy and are like racist? Well, not really anymore. Oh, never mind.
Yeah.
I think the average Latter-day Saint is not terribly based. And I think it's because of this, misunderstanding of how politics works. And the problem is that we believe we can divorce ourselves from politics, and that's just not the way it is. Church policy is more inspired by, you know, what will seem the most appealing to like this left-wing radical group of the country than it isn't actually being, you know, theologically consistent sometimes. Mm-hmm. To be fair, so, you know, not all of these policy decisions are made at, you know, the prophet's desk. They're being made probably by, like, you know, some people who are hired to do HR or to make press releases for the church. And that's not always, you know, revelatory. It's like what probably looks good on paper. But I wish they were more based. One thing that I think the church is super based on is this unity under Christ. And obviously, you know, the families. The church has a proclamation, which is like canon in the church, called the family, a proclamation to the world. And this is unchanging doctrine, which, you know, codifies the family as, you know, one man, one woman. And we even extended further. When you're talking about, for instance, the transgender issue, we believe in a pre-existence. We believe that we existed before we were born here on earth, that we actually chose to come to this earth, and we agreed with God's plan to send us here, and which is a super interesting theological idea. It kind of dispels with this problem of, well, we just came here because it was God's choice. No, we chose to be here. But when you look at this doctrine, it says also, the family proclamation, that gender is inherent, that you are a man or a woman before you are born. So it has a pretty good theological like expulsion of some of the issues about gender identity that mm-hmm. we're facing nowadays as well. And in that sense, you know, the theology is based. The theology is there.
Right,
I just
right.
wish we got better at our press releases.
Make sure. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I think that a lot of people were experiencing this conversion to Christianity. A lot of it is solely based on how insane gender theory is.
Yes.
Big time.
And yeah. I'm fine. Whatever gets people to the religion.
There was what's that thing? There was it's like a paradox or a dilemma or something like that.
Where, oh,
you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Where it's basically just like, I don't know if God is real, but whatever these people are doing is so evil and satanic.
It's the opposite. I want the opposite.
Then I'm just going to go ahead and go the other way just to spite these freaks.
That's how Rushdie came to Orthodoxy.
Yeah. Based. Yep. And you know what?
Oh, it's Pascal's Wager, I think.
Pascal's Wager, right.
Thank you.
It's the modern Pascal's Wager, yeah.
Right? And I want to point out, like, I haven't seen Roosh in years.
Because he's an Orthodox monk
he's
now.
He's literally just gone and with God in like a monastery, mm-hmm. living the life, doing the right stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Mad props to
Roosh. He's a good man.
I totally forgot about him until you mentioned him.
He really is. Yeah, I mean,
he pulled all of his books so he doesn't have any more ill-gotten gains from the advice that he's given to young men.
Yep.
And he just absolutely devoted his life to a Christ-like existence. I emailed him like a year ago and I didn't get anything back. He is
I hope
gone
I
away.
See him in heaven.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
I saw him give a speech at an event in West Virginia forever ago that Michael Sisko did called the Trad Forum. The name could have used some...
Michael Sisko. Yeah, he's a good guy.
And so I was one of the speakers there as well. It was really funny because they had like questioning afterwards. Mm-hmm. And it was E. Michael Jones, Roosh, and I. And so you had all the memes like an ortho bro, a Catholic, and a Mormon walking into a bar.
Oh my God.
And the Mormon stays outside because he doesn't walk into it. But we were all there, and Roosh gave this it was almost a sermon, and he talked about his personal experience. This is what I loved about it. He just reflected on himself. And I do the same thing when I give speeches typically, especially talks in church. I will basically try to give myself the best advice I can in this talk because I think we're so focused on what everybody else is doing when in reality, when it comes to our personal salvation, we have to look, you know, inward. But he gave this speech and was saying, you know, do I love music more than I love God? I was constantly listening to music and, you know, it was much easier to turn on music than it was to pick up the scriptures. And he would mention all of these things. Do I love this thing more than God? Do I love material wealth? Do I love, you know, talking to women more than I love God? And it caused like serious introspection in me. And it was an amazing speech that he gave. And in that moment as well, like I talked to him a little bit afterwards, but it was just it was very sincere, this testimony that he had. And I loved listening to him. It was awesome.
Yep. Yeah. I know a lot of people question his sincerity, but, I believe that he has had a sincere conversion.
Absolutely. If anybody had seen that talk, there would be no doubt.
Right.
You get a sense of it. You get a sense of the spirit.
I agree. I hate to do this, but we do have a hard out at 5.
We do. So make sure you get your last minute super chats in at thebacklash.net/superchat. And before we read them, I did want to point out that today is Holy Monday, the day when Jesus Christ made a scourge and drove the crooks out of the temple. And I posted earlier about how
we, sure kinda, did.
We need him to go out on Wall Street.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, wouldn't really. That be great? And because it is Holy Week, make sure that you check out our past episode with Father James Maudsley. We talk at length about the change in Catholic doctrine, Catholic liturgy when it comes to Good Friday, the prayer for the Jews, and whether or not you should be kneeling for them or calling for Christ to be crucified with them. Yeah, these kids have just been screaming.
Oh, is that a
time.
Kid? I thought it was a chicken. Okay.
It's okay. No. So anyway, yes, last minute super chats. Get them in the backlash.net/superchat. Let's go to the first one we got here from Big Papa Trump, who tipped
Big Papa Trump.
$5.
Thanks.
Dear Goyim, for 30 shekels, Judas kissed your Lord. This act unfortunately led to his demise. But you got a new religion. Suffer the insufferable, tolerate the intolerable, forgive the unforgivable, and believe the unbelievable. Your chosen president, Donald J. Trump. Okay.
Thank you, Donald.
Thank you, Don. Thank you, Don. I guess I should have read it in my Donald Trump impersonation voice. Noticing Nose tipped $10. Hey, all, be sure to check out my Rumble donations, too. I made a few donations during the stream with Father Maudsley. So glad you had him on. Also, Vince, as usual, is looking very handsome.
Yeah,
that's what
they say. Have you been working out, Vince?
I have not.
I tried to get him back into the gym, for what it's worth. First time we talked.
Kai and I went to the gym just before we went live. He was pumping some iron. I was on the treadmill.
Nice.
That's the other thing, this muscular Christianity.
Yes.
That's huge.
Yep.
Yeah. Gen Z is going to the gym like crazy.
Yep.
It's nuts.
That is another thing,
Unbelievable. And yes, noticing we will be checking out the Rumbles. I need a better way of like getting that stuff. Maybe Vince can be helpful there. Probably. Yo, Jimbo Rackford sent $10. I've unretarded myself by getting my super chats in before the show ends instead of like a boomer fag. Watch out for ghetto monkeys. They can respawn anywhere at any time.
Yes.
Yeah. When I got
that
home,
video? Do you know that clip?
That is actually true.
When I got home that night, I watched that clip like 10 more times. Yeah.
He placed his bed there and, you know, lost all his loot. That's why he comes out naked. He lost all his armor. He dropped all his items.
Spawned out of the tree.
Look, I've felt it, dude. When I die and I lose all my armor, I have to go run back to where I lost it. I would have been sprinting like that, too.
Oh, my gosh. Mr. Bing Bong tipped $5.
Hi, Bing Bong.
Don't be fooled, folks. Mormons aren't Christian. I'm not interested in hearing from non-Trinitarian sects who think God was once a man. Good show as always.
Can I respond to that?
Oh, of course.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I think the best way of putting it, because a lot of people will read that and they'll say it's heretical, because there's this statement that a prophet, Lorenzo Snow, said, which is, as man is, God once was, and as God is, man can become, which sounds very heretical on its face. Well, let's replace God with Christ. As man is, Christ once was, and as Christ is, man can become. Do you guys have a problem with this statement?
That makes more sense. Mm-hmm.
Is Christ not God?
Yes.
There we are.
That makes more sense. Gotta tell you.
Well, you should leave it with that when you're knocking on someone's door. Wait, hang on. Let me just show you. We were talking about working out.
You're just trying to trick us.
Someone posted this meme under the picture that Owen Benjamin posted of us, where I was on my tippy toes. Remember that? Where I was on my...
Yeah.
I used to do that all the time.
I was just doing it for a joke. But someone posted this meme. It says, men who train legs 3 times a week versus a 42-year-old father of three who hasn't seen the inside of a gym since the Cold War.
So true.
That's true.
So
true.
Anyway,
oh my gosh, that's funny. That was such a great episode with them.
That was fun.
Great surprise with Owen showing up.
Yep.
Egrin tipped $10. Streamlab working. David,
nice.
Our Lutheran church is willing to work with you to remove degenerate crap and build families. But we can't have these bulldog fights on theology. It hurts both of us. I don't know who's fighting.
No one's fighting.
We're not fighting. We're going to be having... So next week, we've got Jay Dyer coming on Monday. And then the following Monday, we've got... Corey Mahler,
right,
from the Stone Choir podcast.
He's so great.
I believe he is what I would consider a traditional Lutheran.
Yes.
So we're going to be getting that perspective. We are in dialogue with our Christian brothers and sisters on this show, The Backlash. We are trying to figure out where everyone stands and how we all fit together in this process of making America American again. So we will be talking with them. It won't be a debate. I really don't want to debate Jay Dyer.
No.
I've been like,
it's over.
I've been like kind of dreading it all week. Like, oh my God, do I need to like binge read my Catholic encyclopedia to prep for Jay Dyer coming on. Yeah.
It sounds anyway. Like great fun. It's going to be great.
It'll be great. We're going to have a nice stream. It'll be very nice, very, very tremendous.
He's a legend. He's
yeah,
a legend.
He is.
SLIDD2BCC729E238-3879.
Okay, okay.
Sent $10. We can't agree with the Muslims, Rebecca. This is not like the X-Men unless it's Catholics and Protestants against Muslims. Rebecca,
okay.
Do you have an LXX? What's that? What's an LXX? Help me. Vince, I have a list of questions for Corey J. Mahler. I'll send to you, please, and thank you. Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Please. Send it to us. We will ask.
I don't know what that means.
I don't know what an LXX is. I don't know. I've been like addicted to these videos on, I don't know, LXX is reminding me of Louis Vuitton for some reason. I've been addicted to these videos of Chinese manufacturers.
This is sometimes referred to as the old Greek Testament.
Oh, the Septuagint.
Yeah.
Is that seriously what he meant?
Why do they call it the LXX?
Because there's 70 books.
Oh, LXX.
Real.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So that makes sense. Septuagint. I have a copy of that. Maybe we'll have to just like stack the table with all of like the Catholic books in my, you guys can't see in there. But,
it's
like,
crazy.
My 1913 Catholic Encyclopedia, the Haydock Bible, all of the Vatican councils. It's tremendous, really an amazing collection. We don't have anything on entropy, no new Streamlabs. I believe we are good.
Thank you so much for joining us. I'm sorry we couldn't give you some more time.
No worries.
We really
I'm glad
appreciate
to be
it.
Here.
Thank you so
guys.
Much, Kai. This is Kai Schwimmer. We are The Backlash. All links below. Check us out. We'll see you on Wednesday. Bye.